Welcome in, folks, to the Can We Kitchen Podcast. I'm your host, Mike, along with Chuck.
What's up?
Not much, man. How you doing?
I'm living, man.
Yeah.
L-I-V-I-N.
just living. Yeah.
Just living, man. We get a little late recording this week.
Yeah.
But
it's a weird time for shows. Yeah. I mean, it's we're recording this on Sunday night, but there's kind of not much on right now in our wheelhouse for the most part, with House of the Dragon ending and The Bear. I think we both took our sweet time on The Bear, but
yeah,
both of those are over. So now there's kind of a lull, but there's some other shows that are about to start.
Yes. Yeah. So it's been, kind of this week. I really finished House of the Dragon early in the week and then hadn't really watched much TV except for Cowboy Cartel on Apple TV, which is a little documentary about cartel members buying horses and laundering money through horse racing, which was neat, which was a good little, I think it's like four episodes, nice, easy now, watch.
Is Glenn Powell in that one too?
Yeah, he's the main horse trainer. He plays Armando Zapata. Talk about, what do you want to talk about? The Bear, House of the Dragon. Let's do House of the Dragon first, and then we can.
Yeah, let's talk Hot D, because I think that'll be a little bit easier to get through.
There's some thoughts on both.
Yeah. So, House of the Dragon, right, is all now. So, last season ended with Rhaenyra losing Jacaerys, Jace. Because Aemon killed him with Vhagar, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so this whole season has basically been about her getting over that and then trying to reestablish her position to be able to fight in this war, because dragons are the key.
Yeah.
Now we've got some non-royals flying dragons. So now the myth has kind of been busted that only royalty can do this kind of thing. Yeah, they're of blood, but they're not of they're not court born, so to say.
Yeah. Well, and it's interesting because, like, I think if I was to surmise this season, it was Rhaenyra's revenge for the death of her child and basically Daemon killing one of, was it Aegon's children?
Yes.
A child for a child. Just like the eye for, well, it started with Aemon because Jacaerys took the eye. And then they're just killing kids back
and
forth.
Just tit for tat.
Yeah. And then, so it's like, and then, like you said, her grieving. And then it's just kind of this chess match. And then like, it's just moving pieces. This season was moving pieces around the board.
Yeah.
You know, setting up like, okay, now Rhaenyra has like this many dragons and like it is of consequence who they're ridden by, but now it's basically like we have four dragons or seven dragons versus they only have three. And or whatever, I forget the total numbers, but and really kind of like they nerfed Aegon, right? Like he gets toasted by his brother, and now like in the finale, he's whisked away by Lucerys. I mean, not Lucerys. What's his name? The weirdo foot fetish guy.
Yeah. Laerys.
Laerys. Yeah.
Yeah.
And
Laerys the foot lover. Yeah.
Yeah. Laerys the foot fetish. Laerys the fetish. And then Olivia Cooke, Allison is like debating whether to leave, you know, and basically offer the end is basically like, you know, we do have in the season Rhaenyra going to make a plea to Allison, sneaking in the city. And Allison like, nah, fuck that. We're good.
Yeah.
And then
finding out
Allison
that the
goes.
family shouldn't just reuse fucking Aegons for the last 1,000 fucking years. Yeah.
And then Allison, going now to Dragonstone and doing the same thing to Rhaenyra, but Rhaenyra basically gets her to say, all right, like, we're going to kill Aegon or whatever, or Aemon, I forget which one. But it's been a good season. I like the Daemon stuff at Harrenhal.
All
the vision
that.
At the Weirwood tree. I mean, they spend a lot of time. I mean, Daemon's been like sidelined the whole season there, but I like the kind of, is Allison strong? Like, is she real? Is, is he seeing things? But, we know when he goes out, he's hearing things in Harrenhal. But so you kind of get a sense of what's real or what's not. But, when he touches a tree, he gets like the visions, and we see the three-eyed raven. We see Daenerys sitting with her three dragons, at like a flashback scene, or in this case, flash forward to Game of Thrones. So the interesting part for me, and get your thoughts on this, is we know where this ends up. I mean, anything, these are all books too, right? I mean, in Game of Thrones, it took liberties because it was kind of like the end of the story or what we have from George R. R. Martin, right? And then but the House of the Dragon is like the Civil War leading up to where we get to. So, like, we know that it's the dragons destroying themselves. So you kind of, this could have been done in like two seasons or three seasons, but I did hear that with the strike, they kind of shortened it and they potentially moved the big battle that we would have expected to see at the end of the season into next season. So what are your thoughts on like on this kind of show where we know what's going to happen?
Or it's the really difficult
arc of it. Yeah.
I think the only time, I don't think, has it, let me ask you this. Has a show put out a timeline and then put out a prequel, and has it actually ever been up to standards? Because I don't think so.
And I think you get into the territory of Star Wars too. Like,
exactly.
How do you make it, when you know the outcome, how do you make it like
entertaining
and like suspenseful, or
exactly
where the stakes are high, where like, okay, this person's going to survive, so what's the stakes? Why am I invested in it? And should I care?
You could do that. Star Wars definitely came to my mind first, and then Lord of the Rings, and then they did the Hobbit trilogy before that. And it's like, everybody really just gives a shit about the, the ring. Like, that's what it's all about.
Yeah.
It's really hard for the show to create a prequel to a story that a lot of people really liked. And all of this is stuff that's been discussed inside the Game of Thrones TV series and in the books. And that's what a lot of this is drawn from.
Mm-hmm.
It's pretty tough to do. There are parts that I like. Now, I'll be honest. I've read part of the book. I've looked ahead. I know everything that happens. I know who dies and who doesn't. And I know who, like, all the backstabbers are and all this kind of stuff.
Yeah.
They do present it in a great way. This season just felt slow. The only thing I really enjoyed for me was Daemon and Harrenhal and his visions, and then the vision almost felt a little too on the nose of him seeing the White Walkers, and
that was cool.
It was almost like Time is a Flat Circle in True Detective season 4, Night Garbage Country. But it was a little too on the nose, but it was good because it changed how everything went. He's just Matthew Smith, who plays Daemon, is just such a great actor. I don't think they're using him the right way. It's such a shame.
Yeah. In season one, he like carried it. And then the two younger Rhaenyras and Allison were awesome.
Yeah.
And then Matt Smith was awesome. And then the actor that played Jacaerys was great. Or Viserys. Yeah. No, Viserys, the first.
Yeah,
king.
Yeah. Viserys the first.
Viserys.
Yeah,
yeah.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Paddy Constantine.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. Yeah. So you basically nerfed like one of the best things the last season, and now you kind of focused on different parts of moving pieces around. Like for example, when you go, I mean, like they went to the Vale, you saw the crossing, the twins, and you see the fray. Like you see some of this with great Game of Thrones, and initially you're like, oh great, but like, do I care about Kevin Lannister like mud wrestling some girl to have them sail with them? Or like, there was no, it didn't feel like it was backstoried enough.
No, like, I agree.
Well, that's the thing. Like Game of Thrones gave you like six fucking seasons through, or seven, eight seasons, whatever it was, to go through that. Cause the first season you're like, oh, cool, you got the Starks and these guys rule the roost and the breath. I mean, you got names, but you got the story, and you got, and then it's like, oh shit, Ned's head got cut off. Like, wait, we got chaos. We got, you know, all these people. We got, it just became like, you became vested. You were so, you got that gut punch because you're invested, like, oh, the Starks, these are honorable people in this non-honorable world, and everybody's stabbing each other back, and these people, like, you know, are great. And then you got the Lannisters and like pushing kids out the window, and then like under, you know, trying to make sure they don't get in charge, and Ned's head gets cut off, and then
yeah,
everything changes. It's like
it's rotted at its core, right? You think you know, Robert Baratheon took over and defeated the Targaryens, but in reality, the Lannisters just, you know, place themselves in control, even though Baratheon thinks he's in control, because none of those kids are his kids,
yeah,
right?
Well, my major thing through, so George R. R. Martin, does he have a problem with like, did someone cheat on him, or like, were his parents divorced or something? Like,
probably.
Like, everybody's kids are not like the spouse, or is he way ahead of his time? Like,
yeah,
you know, I mean, like, Rhaenyra's kids are fucking Harlan Strong or whatever was the, I forgot that from season one, where like, oh yeah, he has black hair or brown hair because his dad was like,
yeah,
this other guy, and then like
he wasn't a Targaryen, he didn't have silver hair, and then
all like Baratheon and Cersei's kids were all like Jaime's and Cersei's, and it like Jon Snow was Aegon, or one of the freaking dragon, and then also his sister. You know, so it's like there's nobody, and even like Corwus's kids, like his two, like, it's just like,
it's two bastard sons.
Yeah, Alan and Adam, I love it. That's like, they give like the commoners, like, have, well, not even common, like Lannister, there's like Kevin Lannister.
it's like Dune. It's like there's Paul Atreides and Duke Leto Atreides, and then there's Duncan Idaho, and it's like, did you just pull fucking names out of a hat? Like, oh, let's go with
AI generator.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I think it's hard to do a show with a prequel, considering we know all of the badass players, and then you pull in these players from this world, right? Which I like that we get to see the, what they call small folk, which in our time we would call the lower middle class, or lower lower income class.
Yeah.
Yeah. But, you know, they show all this, you know, oh, these people have hated these people for 1,000 years. Can we just get over this shit so we can all fight and take over? And, oh, but we'll bend the knee to you. Like, that's all kind of cool and stuff. But, like, cool, you're showing me, like, a Stark that doesn't fucking matter in the great realm of all the Starks. Like, it's a guy that doesn't matter. Cool. Like, or a Lannister that doesn't matter. So this is Jaime's great-great-grandfather. Why do I care? Like, yeah. He's over here mud wrestling with Polly Shore, or whatever her name was. But
her name was Sue.
Yeah,
Cranston.
Yeah, but it's a tough thing to do. It's hard to do when you know to some degree how this is going to end. I think it's cool how it's going to end, just based on stuff that I've read, and you know, from the actual, we'll see how they stick to it. But I think they'll try to use the excuse that just because history's written doesn't mean it happened exactly that way.
You know yeah, what I
mean? That's and it can be they'll get off with.
Yeah, and they can, you know, interpretation is up to the viewer and the reader, and so you can take liberties. And I don't know if they've said like everything is canon, like, you know, in Star Wars, like if it's happened in the universe, like we're not changing it, or it's can't, you know, like, so I mean, it could be something different, but it will be interesting. I mean, because I still think it's a great show, and I really enjoyed, I like, you know, I think in, you know, Game of Thrones, there was like, it's people in rooms drinking wine, you know, and having a conversation. And at the end of the day, if it's good, it's good writing, and it's good source material, that makes it palatable. But usually you want to see more. I mean, like, but the action scenes with the dragon, you know, Aemon burning Aegon and his dragon, you know, there were some good scenes, but they did, you know, they cut flash forward to a lot of, you know, through a lot of different battles, where you don't see the battles. Like in Game of Thrones, you would have you know, an hour and a half long episode of just like a battle, you know,
Battle of the Bastards, baby.
Battle of the Bastards, Hardhome. You know, there's so many good episodes like that. But you know, it's a hard thing. It's, you know, that's why, you know, sequels don't always do as well, and prequels. And once you have this really game-changing thing, it's hard to repeat it, you know, by spinning off the same sort of material. Like, so, but it's still good. I'm still going to keep watching season three when it comes out, which will be probably in 2026. And, but you do, there is a little Game of Thrones, I think it's like the night, they in HBO's vignette of the finale of House of the Dragon, there was like the Knight of the Seven Kingdoms is coming next year, and it's another story within the universe, and we may get like Three-Eyed Raven origins, and like it's in between, like I think what I read is in between this and Game of Thrones time. So
yeah, it's one of the Targaryens, because if I'm not mistaken, it's related to, you remember the Blind Maester at Castle Black?
Yeah.
That was actually a Targaryen. It's like his old, like, grandsire or something like that. Like, it's somehow connected into that. I think it's the one that he called Egg. I don't remember, but it's all...
Well, there's Duncan and Egg. They nerfed that one, but, like... I don't know that I didn't read too much of it, but I just, we'll have to talk about that HBO trailer the next time we pod, because I don't want to get into it too much, but there's a lot of good shit coming. But
last anything, question.
Yeah, go ahead.
Worry about from my side for House of the Dragon, because I was reading articles about it and looking on Reddit, and of course, you know, and a lot of people have opinions. And I tend to agree with them, because Game of Thrones, I don't think, went this direction until late in the series, but. Did they focus too much on Rhaenyra and Alicent as the center of the show?
I think that's where what Game of Thrones did so well is they managed all the pieces on the board without just having focused on a couple people. I mean, you had the central, you know, you had the central themes in Game of Thrones and the main families and stuff. But like, I knew, you know, Arya was like in that fucking Pentos or whatever, where like the people go and borrow money, and like we knew everything about that place. It wasn't just like giving us a little bit where we have no investment. Like, you know, she was blind at that point, she was doing that, and like it, you went all across the board and you knew, like, and when I forget the guy's name that was like Daenerys Targaryen's like support system that got grayscale, but like you knew like how you got grayscale, and like the island that people were like doomed to when they got grayscale, and
like
they
Valyria.
Valyria, and him and Tyrion are on the boat, like, and he gets touched, like Like, but we understood that. And, but I mean, some of it, people understood it because of the book, and I read the book as well. But even if you didn't, you got the text, you got the information built through the show.
Yes.
That you knew what that was, or it'd be easy or relatable. And this, it's like, there is a lot of focus on Rhaenyra and Alicent. And I think in the first season, it was good as you get to know them, but like, I often found more exciting, you know, like when they brought in the poor people to see if they could ride dragons, when they were anywhere else. When they said, we talked a lot about Daemon at Harrenhal and like yes. touching the weirwood tree. And, you know,
I wanted more Harrenhal. Yeah.
And, but even like the world's douchiest hand, Kristen Cole and Spider from Slow Horses. Their interactions were much better, I think, than just, and like this season, it's like, oh, it's, it just really does a disservice, I think, to Alicent Rhaenyra, because it was more of like when things got tough for Alicent, she's like, I'm going to run off and like go swimming. And Rhaenyra's like, I'm going to go mope. You know, it kind of gives a bad look, you know, now they're making their comeback
yeah.
story, or at least Rhaenyra, but it's kind of like, you know, they focus too much on it. I completely agree. I think yeah. it could have been more world, especially since you were doing this season, it's just moving pieces along. You could have done more world building.
Yeah.
And you could have sidelined them a little bit. But
totally agree. Yeah. So. Totally agree. Well, just manage the pieces right. You know, just build me this world. I know about this world, but give me some facts about this time period, right? We know the Lannisters. We know they got gold, right? Yeah. And we know about, you know, the gold bank of Braavos and all this kind of
Braavos,
stuff.
Braavos, yeah.
Yeah.
But and that's it.
Give me more of that.
The other thing is, like, when Lannister in the final is, like, at the Triumvirate or whatever and trying to get, like, you know, them to sail with him and back Allison's crew, they're like, oh, well, we need her to make sure you're good at sailing. No, Lannister has a fucking coin. You pay them like it's like the sellswords they would bring it. You know, so like it, some of it didn't make sense from what we know from Game of Thrones versus like, oh, like, wouldn't it make sure I can best you in battle? Like, to me, it'd be like, piss off. Like, I'm going to pay you.
Yeah,
you
do don't you guys want to work know. Or not? Yeah, like, I got war to be fought here. There's fuckery afoot. Let's go to war.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
thought you wanted to get paid. Yeah. yeah. There was a lot there's of that just seemed excessive. Yeah.
Yeah. There's a lot of nitpicks and stuff, but it was it's still well done.
Yeah, yeah.
Production and
just keep throwing money at
enjoyable.
It. I mean, Apple's pulling back on their budget. I'd say HBO just keep throwing money at shows and they'll take the top spot back.
Yeah. Well, speaking of like money and not as much money as HBO, one of our favorite shows, The Bear, season 3 was released. I just finished it last week. I think we took our time with it. Because we didn't want to be spoiled. What I like about Apple TV is they're releasing it every week. For me, with The Bear, I understand why they released it all at one time. Because it felt like one long show outside of the first and the last, the series opening episode and the series finale. Give me your, because I got a couple takes. Give me your overall thoughts on the season. What you liked and you didn't like.
I'll say, so season 3, each season is great in its own respects.
Yeah.
I thought this season was great. I thought these set of episodes, right, kind of reframe the conversation from being about, it's always been about a restaurant and the struggles behind that, but it's more about people who struggle with communication issues, right? And a lot of it's stemming from dysfunctional families and
yeah.
things like that. But, you know, we see a lot more of how like people interact in this industry and how, you know, the young guys are all interested in work and the older people are much more chill and ready to, you know, stop playing the game and all this stuff. And then there's the cutthroat assholes like Joel McHale, which guy plays an amazing asshole. I thought it was a great season. I thought it was an eye-opener for how people, I don't know what it is about Jeremy Allen White playing in dysfunctional families. Maybe he just has that face from shameful to now.
Shameless, yeah.
Yeah, shameless, yeah. But him trying to interact with, you know, a dysfunctional family with alcoholism and mental disorder and sugar, having a baby, trying to deal with her mom who's fucking manic all the time. It's just people who don't know how to communicate at the end of the day. Like, he can't communicate to Claire Bear how he actually feels. He wants to say he's sorry, but he just can't say it. Like, Claire's mom, like, Jamie Lee Curtis wants to help and be loving, but she doesn't know how to do it without being fucked up. It's just an interesting show about communication to me. And I think if season one is 100%, season two is like 99, and this is like 98. Like, is it the best season? No, but it's the third season for a reason.
So what I love about the show is, like, we can have kind of different perceptions of it, but at its core, it's about emotional trauma and family dysfunction, right? And that's what was at the core of Shameless, that Jeremy Allen White was in as well. And I think that's what makes the show, to me, that is so great, even when you quote unquote have like a down season. Just but the interesting part is when you watch TV, like if you say your protagonist or the guy you're rooting for is Carmi, there's growth. He has growth as a chef, obviously, and that's what you see in this show, and especially in season three, and you learn his backstory, you know, all the restaurants, all the chefs that he worked for, the different styles, the different interpersonal styles and management styles. And as a person, what has he done? He hasn't grown. Like, no. How the hard part is, how do you relate? And maybe this is more, maybe relates more in real life, because, you know, when you watch TV, you know, if somebody, they're down on their luck, or they're, you know, had this emotional trauma, and then they build themselves back up, they succeed, and everything ends like in a happy story. I guess real life is like, what does he do? He just buries it deep inside. Like, he can't apologize to Sid. He doesn't go see Suge and the baby at the hospital. He doesn't apologize to Care Bear. Him and Richie never made up this season. Like, his way of dealing with the emotional trauma is burying himself in his work. And I think that's also what happens a lot of times to humans. But the one time that he tries to address it in the show, all he can say is like, fuck you, to Joe McHale. Like, yeah. At the end, like, he's like, I've dreamed, you know, I've always thought about what I was going to say to you. And I think this is why, like, this kind of drives like my kind of nonchalantness in life, like around what other people think of me and like not letting it affect my drive, is because this Carmi is so obsessed, not with the positive influences, like from a mental standpoint, but the negative influence. And when he confronts Joel McHale, he's like, I don't think about you at all. And guess what? I made you a better chef. Look at where you are now. Like, and so one person is completely obsessed with this one guy. And what a great way to shoot the episode where they're at the funeral forever and he's just staring at Joel McHale. Like, yeah. It's just insane. But like, you want the guy you're rooting for to be like, fuck that guy. Like, I'm not going to let it bother me. I'm going to use it to fuel me. And, you know, I forgive him. Or, like, you know, you use that negative effect to shape you, which is what he's done from a chef standpoint, but not from an emotional standpoint. And also his upbringing and the stuff with his mother and the family drama. But you see the growth and Sugar, Richie, Sid, the facts, his fucking mom goes to the hospital, and of course Jamie Lee Curtis, unreal. But that episode is just like, it's like a standalone episode, and it's brilliant. It's like, it's almost like, it wasn't, you know, like for me, like Forks and Fishes, where those were like, for me, the two best episodes of last season.
Hands down.
For me, episode one and the finale were the best two episodes. But this was like a masterclass, like in like supporting people, even though you've had issues. And Jamie Lee Curtis and the actress that plays Suge, just amazing at it, you know. And it's just like, she was there when she needed, and even though, you know, she would kept trying to do her own thing until they finally, you know, kind of figured out it, you can see that happening. I mean, everything on that was like real life, like. And so I think the beauty of it is like, what folk, like Carmi's the main character, all the accessorial characters and the other, I would quote, main characters, because a lot of these people are front and center. We had a Tina, or what, Tina, what's her name? Tina, yeah. Was great.
Which I think Sydney directed that, if I'm not mistaken.
Yes, it was her. Yeah. Yep, it was her directorial debut. It's an awesome episode.
Amazing.
And that's what I think. If I think of every single episode as a standalone episode of the season, it was amazing. As a show, did it move anything forward? Like, it all built up to the finale and seeing, like, Carmi's thought about the review, like, the entire thing. And then all we see is everybody else is celebrating, you know, at Sid's house after ever, you know, like you said, kind of enjoying, like, the perks, the, you know, of, like, in the service industry, and you get to know your coworkers and people across, and you're just like, you know, like almost like an industry night, and everybody's like just relieved and like relaxing and drinking and celebrating. And then he can't, because he, like you said, he doesn't know how to deal with people. He doesn't know how to communicate. And then the review pops up on his phone, and we get the cliffhanger of, is the review good or bad? Because we know, his uncle is gonna, if it's bad, he's gonna pull the plug. They owe him a lot of money. So like, it's the for me, like, obviously, I think we talked about earlier, the premiere episode of the season was just like an ode to cinema, and not a lot of talking, and just like, you know, walks you through his different restaurants and his background as a chef to where he is today. And then the finale, just of showing the different restaurants and the different real life chefs. It's really such a wonderful show, and it's that we have this show to watch.
Yes.
You're not going to get like the average, you know, person that's watching like CSI or some formulaic TV show. But this is, even in its like quote unquote down season, it's one of the best things, that one of the most beautiful things that you'll see.
Oh, yeah.
And most frustrating sometimes.
Yeah.
But because you're like, Carmi, dude, just like
unclench your pearls.
Yeah. Relax, bro. Like,
yeah. But you know, it's such a growing up in such a toxic environment, and then, you know, Joe McHale telling him like, you cut out all the bullshit and you are where you are, And some people use that to like improve themselves in terms of like, work, right? And then other people use it as a defense mechanism to like shelter themselves emotionally, and then they stunt their own growth, right? Emotionally.
Yeah.
That's kind of where Carmi is. And I love that Joel McHale told him, like, I don't think about you at all. It's like, you want him to have this moment where he's just like, fuck you. You know what you did. And Joel McHale's like, I'm going to go take a piss. I'll see you later. Like, it just blows him off.
Well, and we think about that in life, you know, in everyday situation, and you're like, where, you know, you become obsessed with hatred towards somebody, and then, and then most likely that other person has zero thought about the same thing.
About anything.
And it's just like, it's such a great kind of eye opening, like, thing to see. And like, but the bad part is people that would need to see that and understand, you know, they can't, you know, it's not like it's as easy to do, but you know, like where you see the other characters in the show that have dealt with trauma to the same degrees can adjust.
Yep. And
so
let me tell you, I think my favorite part of this show, one, I love that we got all of these famous people to come back for their side cameos. Jamie Lee Curtis, Olivia Coleman. I love the new additions. I think it was kind of ridiculous that John Cena was a fact brother and that he was haunting them. I thought that was hilarious and completely just for fun.
Oh, great.
But then Cousins' ex-wife's new boyfriend, soon-to-be husband, was Josh Hartnett.
Yeah, yeah.
Coming out of left field, didn't see that coming at all.
Yeah, yeah.
I'll be interested to see where they take that next season.
Does Richie go to the wedding?
Yeah, does he go to the wedding? Is the show about Carmi, or is it now about Richie? Who's the main character of this show? I think people are rooting more for Richie than they are Carmi.
Yeah. I want more Rich. I mean, like, I gravitate towards the Richie thing because I think most people would relate. Most people relate to Richie because, you know, he, you know, went through a divorce as a child, is working and trying to ride. Like, the ex-wife is telling, you know, the child that he's like, they think he's lonely, and like, he's really struggling to, you know, to survive and to make it in the world and to take care of his daughter and to do, like, he's like America incarnate. Like, you're rooting for him. And same thing with Tina. Like, yeah. I mean, though, like, and then Sid, like, I'm, you know, these are the people that I'm like, cause I'm like, Sid, you got to get out of here. Like, he's not paying attention. Like, he's changing all your stuff. He's like you'll have more freedom of those. Like, you're going to get screwed. He's going to burn the place down because he can't, you know, deal with reality. And like, but like, and then even like, but it's, to me, Richie and Sid, but you don't have the show without Carmi, because he's that emotional anchor that's keeping the show in the same kind of place.
Oh yeah, he's versus the end up keeping the ship in the bay.
Everybody's
going out to sea. He's just,
the ship ain't going to Roatan right now because Carmi won't let it.
That's right.
And do we want it to be there? You know, we don't. I mean, the other thing is, I watch this show because it's depressing and real life. Not like, I want to see Richie, you know, succeed and Sid succeed and Carmi succeed, but it's real life. Guess what? Restaurants close all the time. People are out of jobs. Like, you know, it is. I like that kind of stuff because it kind of fits in reality.
Yeah.
I can believe this happening, but you know, how often do people stay in jobs where they know they're underappreciated? How often do people like Richie, like, are trying to do better for themselves, but they just can't, no matter what they do, like, you know, he looks over like a forks on the floor, or like, it just, do you have a bad day? Something's always going wrong. So Tina, who is just wants to work and just want, got laid off, and you see her backstory is taking the bus and like trying to go everywhere to get interviews, and works at the Bear because she had a conversation with John fucking Bernthal, which is dead in the show, but when every time he's in an episode is like, he's unreal. You still got to see that, that show, the We Own the Night. He is masterful in there. He is so good.
Yeah. Anytime he's in a scene of this show, he just owns. It's like, oh shit. Like, I forgot this was his show. Like he takes over the scene and just, he's a different caliber kind of guy.
Well, and you see, he sees the potential and the good in people.
He's looking for the best in people, but can't see it in himself.
Correct.
Yeah.
Exactly. And that's the difference, like, between him and Carmi is Carmi's only looking for the best in himself.
Yeah.
And, but he kind of, he doesn't see the best in himself, but he doesn't care about the best from other people. It's all very him-centric. And so, with Bernthal's character, it's like he understands people. He communicates. He sees people. He wants what's best for others, and will give someone a job, because he sees something in her, and like
he has empathy.
Yeah, yeah. And Carmi has no. It's just driven by just emotional trauma.
Yeah.
And he's Arrested Development in that situation. But
yeah,
it's really, I mean, season four, I think, is coming out next year. From what I heard, is they filmed 3 and 4 at the same time, basically, because originally it's supposed to be 3 seasons and they kind of extended it out. And that's kind of like, we're talking about House and Dragon, kind of feels the same way as, kind of extending these shows out to get more, more money, more seasons out of it. But I mean, it's still brilliant, and it's still, going to be in my nice top 5, probably, shows of the year. But it's definitely great to watch, and that's, I like spacing it out so I don't just rush through it.
Yeah, you got to save the flavor on a show like this, because you try to binge watch it and you got to start taking like Vicodin or Prozac, because it's so anxiety inducing. It's insane. Yeah. But, and I'll ask you this question, but I think my favorite episode was the funeral episode for the restaurant. And then he's like outside in like the loading bay, and Olivia Colman comes out there to smoke a cigarette. And they're talking about like how she started her restaurant, all this stuff. And he said, "What would you tell your younger self?" And I found it so profound. She was like, "Well, you don't know what you're doing, so you're naive, but that also makes you invincible, because you just don't know what you can't fail at." And I was just it was such a good like moment.
Yeah. And that's a brilliant take on how, you grow through life and your career, and you're just like, when I was young, let's go get her. And, I moved up all the time as a manager pretty quickly at my first company, and worked my ass off and just do whatever, because I didn't have like the understanding of the world, the work environment. And then in my career now, 24 years into work, it's like, become more cynical, you become more like I'm just ready, how can I exit, this
risk
like averse. I'm good, and I'm good where I'm at, or I'm and like, how can I manage the next so many times in my career? And like, and that was a great scene, because it hit home, to me, where I'm at in my career, trying, okay, what's my exit plan? And like, when can I shut down my restaurant and just do something else? And I think that's why, I mean, that was my second favorite besides the premiere.
Yeah.
Just because, I mean, the premiere was artsy, and I made a list of restaurants that were featured in the show. You know, with the French Laundry and Noma and Daniel, which is the name of the restaurant that Joel in the show is called something else, I think, but in New York, the real restaurant's called Daniel. And Ever is a real restaurant. Chicago is still there. It's still open. It's not closed. You know, obviously Olivia Colman is not the chef there, but you know, and then all the, I think one episode this season, they showed like the facades of a bunch of different other famous Chicago restaurants and stuff. So, you know, it's a good kind of like food tour.
Love story of Chicago, like love letter to Chicago. Cause they showed like regular people walking through Chicago and then somebody like waved. And it was like, I was watching it, like the opening of Cheers where people were just like,
and
it felt
such
way.
It's such a great city, and it's such a unique vibe. And I mean, most big cities have different vibes in different parts, but it was such like, I don't know, it was such a good show. And like it's a first episode and the 10th episode were like my two favorites, but for very kind of mentioned opposite reasons. But can't wait for season four.
Where do you see, what do you think they're going to do in season four? Wait, does Carmi get over all this? Does the restaurant fail? Now, I will say, to tie into that, I love that they talked about how when people leave restaurants and when restaurants close or when people just move on, they take the best parts of that restaurant or a great part of that restaurant, and then they implement it at this new restaurant that they start, or a bunch of people come together and it's all these great things from restaurants. It turns into this great, even greater restaurant, right? I like that it's like pieces, you take pieces with you when you leave, and then when people actually put them together, it puts together like this new thing. I like that they did that, but where are we going in season four?
I think this is the hardest question, in my opinion, because, you know, thinking of like formulaic TV, we get like a mixed review. They're dealing with a fallout. They lose funding. You know, Carmi starts a different concept, but they keep the original beef, which is like the only thing making money in that. And Sid leaves and goes with the other guy, but is frustrated because like she's not as good as a chef without Carmi there pushing her, and kind of has a realization of, you know, the love-hate relationship and working with him and making better. You know, I think that's part of the, it's so hard because just thinking of, I mean, the restaurant still, I mean, it's not, we know it's not making money, even though they are always full, right? They're not turning, they don't have enough turns. The accountant guys, like, you got to get out, and you know, but I think it's so hard to predict where this is going to go, because I don't see any growth in Jeremy Allen White or Carmi, and I see growth in the other characters, but where can they realistically go? Like, you know, does Richie start working for, you know, his ex-wife's husband because he seems to have a fancy house? Like, are they like, you know, did Carmi like go into, you know, fucking mental health care? I mean, this is just like, I mean, it could blow all up at the end and everybody ends up with their separate ways, but I don't know. This is one of the harder things for me to predict where it's going.
It's a tough one. I have a theory that Sid's going to leave and start that other restaurant because every show needs a Nate the Great backstabber. Yeah.
Well, that's what I think like historic TV would do with the situation.
I agree.
But I think this show is almost like,
not that.
You know, it's not that Sid would be like, she knows she needs to leave, but
what she
you know,
stayed.
That's like when she reads that review on her fridge, the of the beef or whatever, like, and has that breakdown, it's like, to me, I mean, people interpret it so many different ways on Reddit, but to me, it's like, she knows she can't leave because this was her pinnacle, what she wanted to work for Carmi or whatever. So, yeah, I mean, most shows, and this may turn out this way, like, she would leave and go start the other restaurant, then they compete. Maybe they pull Tina over there or Marcus because they said, why do you have a dessert chef? And, you know, like, it could easily split up. Richie goes and works over there because him and Carmen aren't getting along, you know.
It's all on the nose, like, shit that we as, like, TV analysts can see, like, any formulaic TV.
Yeah.
Network television would be like, all right, we're setting this up by doing this, and then we're going to do A, B, and C, right? The show is not like that. I think it could go that way, but I think the show is going to go, I think they're going to stay, but they're going to tell Carmi, like, he's got to figure his shit out because he's just an incredible asshole.
Yeah.
And if you notice, everybody in the show does stuff for other people, right? Like, Cousin does all this stuff. Like, he's realized his, like, daughter is everything, and, like, his relationship with his ex-wife is getting better, and he's trying to be a nice guy with her fiance.
Yeah.
And everybody's doing stuff for other people. Like, Jamie Lee Curtis is helping out her daughter with having a baby. Like, all these people are doing things outside of themselves, and we don't see that being done for Carmi. Like, Carmi doing that for the most part. Yeah. I think there's one of two things. Somebody is going to need help, and I have two theories around who it's going to be. One, it's going to be Claire Bear. I think that's too on the nose. Like, she's going to get in a car accident or something like that, and he's going to have to take care of her. I think that's too on the nose.
Yeah.
I think the other situation is going to be their father comes back to town, and either A, he's a recovering alcoholic who's been sober for the last 5 years, or B, he left because they were all dysfunctional, and now he's, like, fucking ultra rich and, like, wants to reconnect. But Jeremy Allen, like, pushes him away.
Yeah.
I think his dad's going to come back into this. They keep hinting the dad.
Yeah.
I think it could be amazing if they cast it right. I don't know. Like,
like,
bring Kevin Spacey out of retirement, out of his Me Too era, to be their dad.
Yeah. Or you could bring a, like, I don't know, the famous Chicago, you know, actor. Or the one of the guys that would play the Bears thing on Cheers, you know, or not Cheers, on Saturday Night Live, like the Bears, like
the Bears.
Have Norm. Is he still alive? The guy that played Norm on Cheers that would do the Bears.
God, I know his name.
I don't know, man. There's a lot. We could spend another hour on the podcast speculating because something's going to happen to throw Carmi into turmoil. But
what about Michael Imperioli is their dad?
That would be good. Bob Odenkirk, was he guest star in here?
Yeah, he was their uncle. Yeah.
Oh, that's right.
Dustin Hoffman. He's old enough. Almost too old. I don't know. Now I'm kind of like a Michael Imperioli.
I got this. Look, hold on. Go down the conspiracy path for me in this. Joe Biden's not running again. He's stepping down to play the Bears' father in season four. He walks in, he's like, what's your name? Sorry.
He's got to work the register at the restaurant, and he's like,
yeah.
You wanted what?
Marcos, can you make me an ice cream cone back there? And he's like, where are we at again? Oh, sorry.
Bobby Cannavale.
Ooh, that'd be great.
Yeah.
Put some age makeup on him.
Yeah, there could be some good dudes. There could be some good dudes. I think that'd be a nice pull-in for next season. Do they ever bring it in? Maybe not. it's always nice when they do leave these characters out. I think they do have to sometimes.
Yeah.
Because they brought it, the big bad for him wasn't his dad, it was Joel McHale. And now he's like dealt with that. But
did he?
Yeah, did he? I mean, it certainly wasn't satisfying, but he said his piece.
Yeah.
Yeah. So yeah, it'll be interesting to see where they go. It's a tough one. It's a show you can't predict. It's very unusual. It's kind of like Outer Rim. You just can't predict
it. Yeah, that's what makes it good.
Yeah, I agree. Any other thoughts?
I think we talked exhaustingly about both shows, so I'm good, man.
Yeah, Bear will definitely, I think, crack the top five of the year. I think it was a really good season.
Yeah.
Yeah, appreciate everybody for kicking it with us this week. You know, be sure to tune in next week. We'll be talking about some shows that are coming up. Industry, I'm going to try to get on, and there's some other shows we're going to try to watch. But yeah, check out the Instagram, the website, eventually the TikTok, and then Chuck and I are going to try to stream a game of College Football 25. Either of us can ever stop throwing picks for 5 seconds. And we'll be throwing that up on the YouTube channel. So yeah, tune in next week, as Cousin likes to say.
Cousins.